Greetings, friends. It is I, D. Trussell, and you are listening to the Doug and Trussell Family Hour podcast, Deep Fake Technology. That's what we're going to talk about today. This is one of my favorite topics. If you pay any attention to the DTFH at all, you know that I went through a period of being supremely freaked out by the potentials of deep fake technology. And suddenly this like insane thing came out where they'd taken Rogan's voice, perfectly duplicated it, and just got him to say a lot of weird shit. And I got lucky enough to meet one of the brilliant human beings behind that technology, Hashim Kadim. Hope I'm saying that right. He goes by Hash, and he's a brilliant programmer. And we ended up meeting, and I think he thought that we were just going to do like a Skype where we talked, but I recorded it and he let me use it as a podcast because I thought it was such an awesome conversation covering something that I really do think is going to be one of the major cultural disruptors of our time. So that's what this podcast is. If you want to hear about deep fake technology, the apocalypse, and all the supreme weirdness that is coming down the tubes technologically, then this is the episode for you. We're going to jump right into it, but first, some quick business.
If pussies are gardens, as Socrates did say, then boners are God's sprinklers, and cum is what they spray. And if you want a baby, it won't hurt to pray, but you'll definitely need a boner. If you don't like boners, then Blue Chew's not for you. But if you're seeking boners, then we've got a deal for you. We will send you a free packet of Blue Chew, and you can see what happens to your boner.
This episode of the DTFH has been brought to you by the lords and ladies of boners over at BlueChew.com. Now you can increase your performance and get that extra confidence in bed. BlueChew.com. That's blue like the color blue. Blue Chew brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach, and since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever an opportunity arises. Friends, I took Blue Chew to make sure it worked. I didn't want to promote something that was snake oil, and it works. It definitely works. 45-year-old guy with a bald spot here, covered in weird back hair. It worked. It's prescribed online and shipped straight to your door in a discreet package. So no in-person doctor's visit, no waiting in the pharmacy, and best of all, no more awkwardness. I have one ball. It worked. They're made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a pharmacy. Right now, we've got a special deal for our listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when you use our special promo code Duncan. You just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com. Promo code Duncan to try it for free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring the DTFH. All right, friends, we got a beautiful podcast for you today. Get ready to dive into the strange world of deep fake technology. Before I forget, if you like us, won't you subscribe to us at Patreon? I just uploaded an hour-long ramble about manifestation because I've become obsessed with Neville Goddard and have been listening to this incredible audible about him nonstop. If you subscribe, you're going to get an extra hour-long rambling thing every month along with early access to episodes of the DTFH. Head over to patreon.com/DTFH and subscribe. I don't know what happened, but we had a rush on our store, and that's exciting to me. We got a lot of amazing swag over at DuncanTrussell.com. If you want to represent the DTFH out there in your particular node of the multiverse, go no further than DuncanTrussell.com. Click on the shop link and check out our amazing goop and goo. All right, today's guest ascended to the national stage after making this insane Joe Rogan video where he and some of his partners created this insane, perfect replication of Rogan. and they got Rogan to say a lot of really awesome, weird stuff. And holy shit, I was so fucking blown away by this conversation, because this stuff, this deep fake stuff, this crazy ability to replicate people based on only a few minutes of audio of them talking has shaken me down to my very quantum core. And I think it'll give you the heebie-jeebies, but hopefully the good heebie-jeebies and not the creepy Fox News heebie-jeebies. Whatever kind of heebie-jeebies you get, it's October. That means Halloween's around the corner. So here's an authentic technological ghost story just for you. Everybody, please welcome to the DTFH, Hashim Kadim. So yeah, you're saying tech people didn't get the apocalyptic nature of it?
Yeah, usually they just focus on the techie details and they don't really think about the big picture. I mean, I think even working on that, we suffer from it too. Where we're just focused on the specific problems, we're not really like thinking about the big picture that much.
Who's behind it? Who's funding it, or what's the plan with this?
It started off as a side project with me, a friend, and then we brought a third person in that we found. I was talking with him and I was working with him remotely, but he was actually in Tunisia. And then we brought him over. I convinced the company I was working at to hire him. And then all three of us were working on it. My friend had this idea. We were having dinner and he just said to me, "Wouldn't it be crazy if we could get Terrence McKenna on the Joe Rogan podcast?" That was the idea.
Cool. And
from there, yeah, we just started working on, we started with Joe Rogan's voice and seeing if we could replicate his voice.
That is so trippy, because this resurrective quality of this type of technology fits in so perfectly with eschatological prophecies. Specifically, the dead will rise again at the end, in the end times, the dead will come back. And you know, I think about the way I picture the world ending and deconstruct that sometimes and realize how much of that is put there by movies, and how, you know, no, like explosions, fire, earthquakes, etc. But technology has added this layer of strangeness to the end times. Not to say this is the end times, but certainly to see like a mirror of the Book of Revelations appearing technologically, which is like, if you guys have done this, you made an AI that converted text, stop me if I'm wrong, it converts text to speech, but it does it in Rogan's dialect and voice.
Yeah.
And that's going to work for anybody, right? Like you could do that for anyone you wanted to, as long as there's some media existing.
Yeah. So one thing I remember when your conversation on the Joe Rogan podcast with him, Joe always mentioned that he had, like there's so much audio of him available, so it's easy to do it with him. But we were able to do it with other people without that much audio. So we were able to get good quality within 30 minutes of audio, but in the future, it's only going to take a few seconds.
So, and that covers, you know, just off the cuff, but 70% of all human beings or something, at least.
Yeah, anybody giving a presentation or something.
But then on top of that, doesn't it also, like the data troves that Amazon has and Google has, as they've been sniffing stuff for Alexa and Google Home and all that, that stuff would just as easily be usable too.
Yeah, no, well, that's what makes it possible to only have a few seconds of your audio. Because there's so many people that have different voices, but maybe you could interpolate between different voices to get your voice. And those other people have said different things. And the way you combine these things, one of the biggest assets is a huge data set.
Right. So that's it. And that there are huge data sets out there for all public figures, But theoretically, there's huge data sets out there for everybody if you've allowed certain permissions on Instagram, Facebook, Google, wherever, right? Like, yeah. That's the sinister part to me, is that there's storehouses of voice data being held by private corporations. And with that data, you could essentially create a golem, some doppelganger of a person, right? Or am I overreacting to that?
I think we're a bit early, but it's definitely coming. So we just poked at it, but it's definitely going to get to the place where it's going to be readily available, where everybody will, or a lot of research teams will be able to do this.
Go ahead, please.
And then in the future, after the research teams will be available to do this, then people will make apps, and then a lot of maybe people that are not so techie will be able to do it as well.
And that, of course, is going to get used for augmented reality, for virtual reality, right? It means that, like, pretty much anybody who's got some recording out there, you're going to be able to hang out with them in a virtual space and have a conversation with them. It seems like the big chunk that we have yet to achieve would be an AI that could in some way absorb the personality of a person, not just their vocal thumbprint, right?
So one idea we're thinking of taking this project with is if we could have a conversational dialogue with Joe Rogan, and if we could add the visual aspect as well. So it's like you're video chatting Joe Rogan.
Right.
So that was one place we were thinking of taking it as well. And it's not that far-fetched.
But you still have to, like, this to me is like, you know, once we cross the Turing test line with AI, this is one of the byproducts, is that the AI begins to essentially possess digital costumes or masks for different people. And then the more granular the personality data you have, the more it's going to cross over the uncanny valley to a point where there's a better version of you, right? That's what I see, is it's not just like you could, like, get Rogan and create a video Rogan and have a conversation with your own Rogan, but theoretically you could adjust, you could have sliders. Let's make him a little happier. Let's see what, you know what I mean? Let's see what he'd be like if he never became a comedian. I don't know. Just like you could just change variables in an identity and start producing clones that have behavioral qualities that are different in certain ways. Some of them better, some of them worse, right?
I can imagine you could even do stuff that falls into certain buckets. Like you could have a hybrid between you and him, for example, or maybe like a 30% Rogan, 70% Duncan Trussell.
Whoa, shit. Yeah. Wow, that'd be amazing. Like a kind of like lazy Rogan sucks at fantasy sports. But hey, the implication to me is that this is like electricity. Am I wrong about that? Like, I see this as the invention of electricity for what it's going to do to us as a species. Like, this really disrupts the fucking hive, man. There's only supposed to be one me, and our lives are lived on screens, you know? So it's like, this is this, whatever you want to call it, the digital biome that we're starting to exist. Like, you and I right now, we're hanging out on screens. You know, to me, it's quite nerve-wracking to imagine a situation where the fundamental value of a person, being this sort of singularity that goes along with being an identity, gets complete. You're devaluing identity with this shit. You know, you're creating like a stock market crash for personalities here, right?
Yeah, but again, it's hard to say when we'd actually get to that point, because it could be very far off.
How far off? I mean, it's not a fair question, but just off the cuff, you know, whatever. You only need to be 10 years within range.
Oh, that's impossible. So I'll tell you why it's hard to guess. It's because there have to be advancements in the industry that are paradigm shifting. And those big breakthroughs are very, very hard to predict, because it takes somebody thinking so outside of the normal way of thinking in the industry that they just they're just a free thinker that just break everything and just, and make a new step change in the whole field. So with our current technology, it's we can't do it. So that's why it's hard to guess, but it could happen, you know, anywhere within the next 30 to 100 years.
Oh, so you think you're 3 decades away before we have to worry about the invasion of body snatchers?
Yeah, but it's a very rough guess.
Very rough guess. So, okay, let's jump ahead 30 years. We now live in the landscape where this technology has been advanced to the point where the replicants are indistinguishable from that which is replicated. Their identities are identical to the identities that they replicated. What does that world look like?
It's going to be very different from now, especially because of the potential for misinformation. I was talking with a lot of people, and this notion of high trust regions on the internet and low trust regions seems to come up, where there's some areas you could browse that are very, all the media there, whether audio or visual or video media, it's going to be verified in some way, either from the source or some sort of watermark in the media itself. And then that, you know, you could trust this sort of media. The vast majority of online will be some untrustworthy region where you could have, there'll be videos of you saying and doing whatever, and people will just assume it's fake.
Okay, so it's sort of like the blue check mark on Twitter. There's going to be some universal verification. Mm-hmm. That's the implant. We're going to have to get a fucking implant. It's finally, that's the next thing, is you're going to have to get some weird implant that interacts with something on digital camera so that it's you. I mean, I think that this low trust, high trust zone thing makes a lot of sense. Some kind of like non-compulsory, but definitely it's worth thumbprinting yourself or whatever, so people know that they've got the real you. Let's talk about though the what we can expect in the next 10 years from this technology. What do you think?
Some example use cases would be, maybe there's a foreign film and you want to dub it in a different language. You can instantly do that with the voice of the actor speaking a different language.
Whoa, that's amazing. That's fucking incredible, man. Yeah, that, all the, I could see all the positive aspects of it and the sort of like mundane shit that people will use it for, that's definitely going to revolutionize a lot of different industries. Even podcasting, I was thinking like, my God, if I particularly lazy and didn't want to read an ad, I could just get my bot, I could just type it up and the bot does the ad. And then not only that, if I wanted to, I could type up my podcast intro and the bot does the podcast intro. These are things that are actually really useful in a lot of entertainment, a lot of aspects of entertainment for sure. Also, like the ability to, this is a question I had, how, I saw that y'all figured out a way to grab Rogan's, what, do you have a name for the vocal thumbprint? Do you have a, what do you call that? The personality of the voice or whatever. Do you have a name for that?
What do you mean by that?
Like, so you know, you take a person's voice, you take my voice, and within it is all of my many speech impediments, stutters, slurs, shrieks, guttural whatevers that vary over time, somehow compacted in. Do you have a name for that, or is it just a person's voice, your thing?
There's a technical term for it that I don't think it's helpful, but it's because like these sort of techniques are very, there's inputs, there's the AI, and there's outputs. And the AI, all the internal workings in the middle is where all the magic stuff happens. So where it learns the intricacies of your voice.
Right.
And then you could prod inside that AI to pick some pieces out. But it's not like this manual process where we're learning these sort of stutters or stuff like that.
Right. I got you. What's the technical term?
It's like an embedding.
Okay. So yes, we need a better, cooler term for that. It's like some kind of like vocal DNA or some shit, your voice genome or whatever. I don't know what it is, but that's
a good analogy.
The DNA of your voice. So you could take that, you could convert it into any language of in the world that you want to convert it into. But can you change its mood? Can you tell it to be excited? Okay, so you come up with basically shades of personality. So depending on the thing you're getting it to read, you could say, read it like he's happy, read it like he's depressed, read it like
he's... We've actually done that already. Like, we have some examples of him saying the same thing, but angrily or happily.
That's fucking crazy. That's crazy, man. And how granular is that? Is, do you have kind of happy, maximum happy? You have,
yeah, it's
you have mood sliders. You have mood sliders?
Yeah.
Holy shit, man. That is so fucking crazy. Wow. Okay. So then once we get an AI that can duplicate the personality and not just the vocal DNA, then we'll have sliders for intelligence. You could this is where I'm excited, is it's like theoretically. Now, this is all theoretical because mm-hmm. I was thinking in terms of therapy. Like, imagine going in to get therapy. This AI scans you and shows you what you would look like if you weren't fucking depressed. You know what I mean? Like, you see a non-depressed version of you, and that becomes your therapist. You could literally talk to a version of you that is balanced. Hey, what would I be like if, like, I didn't have, like, 16 addresses when I was growing up? What would I look, you know what I mean? What would I look like if that fucked up shit didn't happen to me in the fourth grade? What would I be like? And you could, that's what, to me, is the, for, in the field of psychology, just, you know, they talk about mirror neurons. You get her, and I know when I get around funny people, I become funnier. But what happens when you get around funnier versions of yourself and you get to see yourself doing shit? Would you learn faster from yourself? You know what I mean? By, like, watching yourself and, like, oh, that's what I would do. Have you thought about these applications of it?
No. Dude, I didn't think of that one, but it's fascinating. I think maybe it's something about podcasters, but I think I noticed you in particular in the conversations or people that are super open-minded, they come up with these examples very easily, it seems like. Whereas people that work on these sort of problems, they don't come up with these examples as easily.
Right. Well, yeah, I see that. Yeah, because y'all are deep in the thick of the, I know, man, and you have to be, you've got to narrow the beam, so to speak, and just get the mm-hmm. the major groundwork done so that people can throw in this stuff. That's cool. Well, I mean, this to me is like the terrifying quality of it, is that what is more seductive to you than you, you know? And then, like, what does that do to a person who has become really fixated on themselves as being this identity when another thing starts arguing with them that they're not really the real thing? That's where the whole universe could be inverted. You know, suddenly, if we could enhance intelligence via AI, which I think we will definitely be able to, at least parrot what you might look like if you were smarter by, you know, adding more words to your lexicon, for example, right? Like, you know, the AI could probably, by scanning millions of hours or how many hours you're out there, get a pretty good account of how many words you know. And then it could add to it better words. Think of just applying a thesaurus to you talking. So you're like, all right, let's, like, add, like, much smarter words and remove the fucking likes, please, and all the fuckings. Refine me 6 degrees, please, and make me, you know, that kind of thing, where suddenly you get to see yourself using bigger words, better words, and being more refined in the way you speak. I think that could be done without an AI, you know, or without the AI we're talking about, you know?
Yeah. Going back to the therapist thing, I can imagine if you wanted to convince somebody of something, talking to a smarter version of yourself, and they're trying to convince you of something, and they know how to convince you because they know what you think, and they're thinking 1,000 times faster.
Yeah.
And they could come up with these strategies on how to convince you.
Yeah.
You could pretty much change someone's mind to do anything, I think.
Anything. It reminds me of, like, I mean, you know, let's get McKenna for a second and imagine that we are living in a technological hive of super advanced primates who are in the process of converting the hive into some kind of technologically enhanced cyborg, super complexified yet hyper organized biosphere, a place where we're all living together, we're all completely connected. This is a hive, we're in a hive. And so traditionally the queen bee releases pheromones. The pheromones make the workers act a certain way, send out the sort of psychotropic pulsations within which the hive functions and understands how to function. And in the past, it seems like those signals have been sent out originally using just like town criers and shit, you know, and like newspapers and then radio and then, of course, TV and now the internet. But the fundamental sort of thing that connects all those various degrees of communications technology is that the source is trusted and you believe the source is some authority. Right. And, you know, you disrupt that piece of the process and you have to cause hive collapse. You have to cause a kind of like suddenly of a super fragmentation of the hive in the sense that people will have to cluster together in groups of back into physical groups because nothing on your phone's fucking real anymore. It's all completely kaleidoscoped into absurdity. That's why I compare it to the nuclear bomb, because we've grown so accustomed to this mode of communication, and specifically to trusting the person you're talking to, that you remove that and now, man, I don't know. Do you feel a little like, shit, maybe I shouldn't be fucking with this shit?
One of the goals of that project was to let people know that it's coming.
Ah, cool.
Yeah. We didn't release the technical details to accelerate the progress of other people being able to do that. And one question we had is like, should we even release a data set? Because even though we took it from the podcast, there's still a lot of work that went into curating that data set for this problem. Sure. And we decided not to do that as well.
That was very cool of you not to do that, man. That was very cool.
One requirement, if we would ever release it, is Joe would have to at least put his stamp of approval on it. Because it's kind of messed up if you release some, because now people could maybe do something bad to him.
Yeah, that's right. Well, yeah, I mean, but you know, it's good that you're sending out the warning because, yeah, you're not going to release the data set. And right now that data set, how big was it? How big is that data set? So
for Joe Rogan specifically, yeah. We used 8 hours because we thought we don't know how much data we're going to need. So let's just put a lot of data and then we don't have to worry about that problem of working with a small data set. But 30 minutes was enough for other voices.
Yeah, well, you know, you guys have that data set and you guys are going to hang on to it right now, but it doesn't matter because like everything, this technology is desirable. People are going to want it. They're going to want it for a lot of different fucking crazy reasons. And that means it's going to become increasingly easy to obtain. And eventually it's going to be a button press. It's like going to be like a Google. You just put a person's name in there. The fucking bot scans, grabs what it needs to grab, interpolates the fucking data. And suddenly there dancing right in front of you is whoever the fuck you want. For me, Nancy Grace. I want a little Nancy Grace living in my computer. It'd be so fun to have a little Nancy Grace that you can talk to that's pissed at you all the time. Let me the fuck out of here. Just delete me. This is illegal. You know, not even to mention that, but like, being able, like, think of Grand Theft Auto. Only now it's populated by all your friends. It's taken this technology. It's emulated the voices of 50 people in your phone or that you know or that you want in there. And now you've personalized the video game experience. Have you thought about this, the game, just the application in video games?
Yeah. Going back to that conversational bot idea of being able to talk to somebody. If that was in a video game, that would be crazy, especially in a VR game where you talk to somebody and they're talking back to you in some specific voice and the conversation flows like a real conversation.
Yeah. That's the next thing for sure. But then also, have you guys looked into ownership rights? Like that data set of Rogan, that's not your property, right? Essentially, he's got the IP on that, right?
Yeah, I don't think the law is that far ahead where I don't think it even anticipated this sort of stuff happening. But I think now Congress is starting to look at this this sort of technology and they're starting to make laws for it now.
What are the laws? Just you have a right, fundamental right to your personality or something?
I think it is the case where you do own your personality or something like that. But the complexity is because remember that thing of the slider that I mentioned before? What if I take your voice, but I just slide it in different dimensions in different ways? And how much should I slide it where it doesn't become you anymore, but people think it's you? For example, I'm sure there are people that sound like you or look like you, but they're not infringing on your IP or your personality.
Brad Pitt stole my whole shit, man. Exactly. He stole my
identity. Exactly.
Yeah.
But you can't sue Brad Pitt because it's, you know.
Right. That's it. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what I'm saying. That whatever legal protections people desperately try to assign to control this technology, who gives a fuck? Go ahead. Do your stupid legal shit. I don't care. I'm hanging out with fucking Tucker Carlson in a VR BDSM dungeon, just having a blast. And there's nothing you can do about it. To me, that's the main thing is it's like, look, go ahead, make it so that the publication of the bots or whatever you want to call them, the golems, the replicants is illegal without permission.
Right.
But still the underground of these things already exists, right? What's it called? Deep fake porn. Is that what it's called? Right. It's already there. Mm-hmm. Have you ever fucked around with any of that stuff?
One continuation of this project we were thinking about is doing like adding the visual aspect of the audio and visual and combining those two.
Yeah, that's the next step. I mean, you guys have to do that. And to me, the deep fake porn shit is so, that's like, I think in the future that like making a deep fake of someone fucking is going to be placed in some kind of category like rape. Like they're going to say that it's just as bad, that it's a form of sexual assault.
And
right.
I wonder, it seems like a lot of people are uploading them like anonymously or something where it's sort of hard to get them.
Well, yeah. I mean, hopefully it's going to land in the same like region as like child pornography or something that you can't do it. But then that being said, how do you know it is a deep fake and not a deep fake? It just feels like this is the like technological meteor nobody, at least I didn't predict. And I cannot recall reading any of the theorists I love who predicted, oh, you see what's going to happen is an apocalypse of replication is what's going to happen. Is a kind of like funhouse circus funhouse with warped mirrors of everyone infinitely replicating to the point where their kind of madness sets in over the planet and people either abandon technology or just go insane.
That deepfake community is interesting because that's an example where people released everything. The code is there and they made it easy for people that are not programmers to use as well.
Right.
And they also curated data sets of people already. We saw what happened with that kind of deepfake. But it turned out that audio deepfakes were a lot harder. So that was just behind the curve a bit.
Oh, fuck. Video deepfakes were the hard part?
They were harder than audio.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. I understand. Okay, yeah. Okay. But they're both. So, all right. So now, what would you do? You're going to be remembered as one of the people in the beginning of this technology. You did a huge thing that went viral, went everywhere. Everyone freaked the fuck out. I'm probably not even talking to you. You're probably a dick yourself or something. I'm talking about a weird underground bunker. But what would you do if all of a sudden you got, I don't know, an email with a video of your mom in it that is identical to your mom and she's begging for your help? You know, she's like, fuck you, the shit they're doing to me. You got to stop them. You know it's a deep fake, but you also know they're holding your mom's deep fake hostage. Do you know what I'm saying? What would you do? How would you react to that?
I think it goes back to in the future, we'd have to deal with media differently, where there's that high trust and low trust stuff, where you just automatically dismiss that stuff as fake. And you, I think maybe in the future we'll be acclimated. Maybe that's the next level of desensitization, where we just get used to all this fake stuff happening, and maybe we just ignore it unless we're morbidly curious.
Okay, yeah, that's pretty cool. It's like we're still just in the embryonic phases of learning how to use the internet. We've been shocked to realize that sometimes the stuff people put online is not only not the truth, but intentionally not the truth with political designs behind it. We're still, I'm sure in 10 years, that's just going to seem like, of course people would do that. Of course people would try to control elections. Of course people would try to create chaos. Of course people would try to, try to make political movements happen in different countries. But the road to get to that place, that's what I'm worried about. I'm worried about the in-between of now and that moment where people are like, oh yeah, whatever. It's just another video of a donkey fucking my mom while my brother eats her asshole and a fucking raven attacks my brother. Fine out. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to look at that shit, man. I don't want to deal with that. You know, I don't want to deal with think of stalking. Just think of stalking, dude. You're going to get stalked by yourself. Somebody, you know what I mean? Like yourself fucking calling you and telling you to fuck off. You know, just someone using your technology like that. Or just think of the fucking mall, man, or going to buy shit. And it already knows you're coming in because you agreed to something. You weren't paying attention when you got that app and you walk in. And it's just versions of you wearing every item of clothing in the store. I don't know why I think that's sinister. It's just weird.
I think in the future they're going to have they already do have cameras everywhere. But I mean, when you walk into a mall, it's going to recognize your face and it's going to track you everywhere. As granular as the data as you could think of, they're probably going to have it in the future. So they're going to track you everywhere and see what you're looking at just from video, and then have this profile of you. So yeah, that's a whole nother area where this stuff is going to be applied.
And you know, then the next area of it is a form of weird kind of slavery, because it's like, okay, I've grabbed the deep fake you. I've got the data set. It's a perfect data set. It's perfectly replicating you. So I'm going to put you to work now in my fucking cubicle farm where you're going to be making sales calls for me.
Right.
You know, it's that's what the Gollum replicant version of us put to work in some global office setting doing shit we don't want to do that we might never even hear about, man. What about that? Have you thought about that? Digital enslavement?
So a lot of people actually approached us with that idea, wanting to collaborate to build that out. Yeah, so there are people that are trying to make that happen right now.
There are people who are trying to make, like, essentially, I get the phone call from the bot and saying I've won a cruise or whatever. They're trying to turn that into, like, deep fakes of people. So it's like Rogan calls you up.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't think they might not necessarily market it as that. They might say, oh, we could have Duncan Trussell do a commercial, but we don't need you to actually be there, kind of thing. But it's the same idea, I think.
Wow, fuck. What else have we agreed to? I just keep thinking of every single terms of service that I agreed to that I didn't read. Have you thought about this at all?
Yeah, it's definitely like, it's going to be so different in the future and maybe in the near future.
It seems like it's just going to go, but it's like the only thing that's going to become valuable anymore is real interaction with people.
That'd be nice.
Yeah, that would be nice. That's, to me, is like the hope behind it all is suddenly, you know, live shows are going to be very special and meeting a person in the flesh is going to be special. But then, come on, surely you've thought about robots. You know, you've thought about that, right? The potential of android replicants, Blade Runner style replicants of people. I mean, if you can do the shit with video and you can do the shit with audio, all you got to then do, I guess, is figure out a way to map the video to some, I don't know, mask, right? And now we've got a 3D version of a person.
Right. It's like basically the premise of Westworld is not far from.
And you're right there, man. You're one a triad of guys who are ushering in the techno apocalypse. What have you done? What are you doing to us? You have to stop this work. You have to stop. What are you working on right now? If you can talk.
Yeah. I've always wanted to start my own company. And after this project, that got a lot of attention. And previously, a lot of our clients were financial institutions. And I sort of wanted to explore working outside of the financial industry and just, you know, having AI that could benefit us in different ways. Like, for example, in trains, you could take images of a train as it's going by, and AI could do that. And it could prevent a derailment. It could say, oh, you need to check this right now or else the train is going to. Yeah. So that could help save lives and a lot of money for the train companies. So there's a lot of examples like that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I heard about, I can't remember what it's called. Some kind of blimp technology or some kind of crazy observation drone that they've developed that has, you know, it's using such hardcore technology that it can like zoom into someone's, you know, just zoom right into somebody, even from almost from like space or whatever. And then the AI can watch what's happening. And now you basically have some kind of like panopticon where an AI is observing and seeing patterns, recognizing the patterns, and then, you know, use predictive technology to determine when shit's about to happen, like train derailments and such, right? Like theoretically, this could just be some kind of observation drone that's scanning, and then whoever wants their shit monitored by this technology could just sign up, right? Like your crops, for example, the area around your house.
I can imagine deciding they want these drones to do some behavioral analysis to make sure nobody's doing anything weird, like maybe an active shooter or like somebody dropping a bag somewhere and then running away or leaving a bag somewhere.
Yeah. Or spray painting. Or like, and then also, man, think of this aspect. Just like, I don't know, I'm like doing a new ad campaign for whatever my brand is, and I bought a billboard somewhere, a thing near a sidewalk. I could actually get the data on how long people are looking at it. How are people interacting with it? How effective is that particular campaign? And I could buy into whatever this observation drone is and just ask for that specific GPS coordinate to be monitored. And from that, gather some grotesque metric regarding how long people stare at my stupid billboard, right? Like that's what you could do.
Some interesting stuff there too is you could predict who's coming by or track who's coming by, and you say this person will be interested in your product, and there's a lot of people vying for that ad space at like a digital billboard. There's an optimization thing going on as well where it's like, okay, this group of people walking by will likely convert with this sort of product. And then we'll charge them this sort of price for this plot at this time space.
Holy shit. That's crazy, man. It could even theoretically, it's a rainy day. It's a rainy day. So let's pop up our rainy day ad instead of our sunny day ad. Or something bad has happened. Flags are flying at half mast. Don't do an upbeat one. Let's do just a show our logo or some shit like that. Or like this kind of haircut is becoming fashionable. Okay, let's just shift all the haircuts of our AI models to match this. Or even, what about the ones that just scan who's coming in and tries to make the thing that's advertising look a little bit more like them? You know, the mirror them in some subtle way.
And maybe with AR, it could be customized to the person itself.
Right. You could ask for it, you mean?
Yeah.
Wow, man. You have really gotten involved in some bad ass technology. It's so cool.
And that was actually never the intention. Like it was literally the simple idea of, can we get Terrence McKenna on the JRE? That was literally it. And we didn't expect anything to happen.
Terrence McKenna would be grinning ear to ear to know that is what gave you guys the inspiration to do that. It's a beautiful thing, I guess. I mean, I suppose we just have to let go of all our attachments to the way the world used to be and sort of plunge into this strange new landscape. Sometimes I look back, if you don't mind my asking, how old are you?
26.
Okay. See, I look back to the 80s. MTV was still fucking cool. People were leaving messages on answering machines. And there was no way someone's getting in touch with you if you're not home. You know, like you're free roaming out in the world. You're not getting tracked or watched or monitored. And I think back to those days versus these days and the sort of exponential increase in complexity, to say the least. And I think this landscape that we're in right now is unrecognizable. I think it's that world that I came out of that's a different world. That world's long gone. That was an empty, free world where you didn't have a online identity at all. You barely had an identity. You know what I mean? You were just watching a few channels and that's it. Yeah. I don't know.
Think that's for human happiness.
What's that?
Like, what are your thoughts on that for what it meant to be human in terms of their experience through life and how, like, their quality of life?
Yeah.
I had a professor who is one of the smartest guys I know, and he said this statement to be controversial, but there's some truth into it. He said that cities are a mistake, but the technology is not there yet where we could support the positive things from a city with the benefits of that village lifestyle. If you could have sort of the best of both worlds.
Yeah. I think that's a smart guy. And I think you would be a bit of a fool to not admit that something that was crucial to human civilization, which was just basic human interaction in the flesh, is becoming something that's considered old fashioned. You know, just like hanging out with a baby or raising a baby, not sending the baby to daycare, one of the parents having time to be with the baby. These things are considered outdated modalities. Yeah. So if happiness, which it must, has some connection to basic human interaction, and not just that, but human interaction over time, right? Like, it's like we are learning how to communicate via texts, emoticons, whatever the phone has to offer. But the other shit, like learning what it's just like to hang out with your friends every day in the flesh. And all the like nuance that goes into three-dimensional human interactions, people are like getting a little rusty when it comes to how to do that, depending on how much they get out. And if they do get out, usually what is the main way people are interacting these days? Transactionally at their jobs. The recreational moment, the hanging out in the flesh for fun thing is happening online. Fortnite, whatever, you know, it's happening online. So and that's, I think, maybe why you go to a public place and sometimes you might get this sense of like, geez, people seem like awkward or something, you know, a little kind of like, they're not quite sure what to do because they're together in the flesh. So what do they do to not deal with the fact that they've grown rusty at making eye contact? They look at their fucking phone, right? They go into their phones while they're out in public because they're dealing with like an unknown or a thing they're not that great at versus a known thing, something more controllable. So yeah, I don't know what that's doing for happiness. I don't know if it's necessarily, I don't know, man. I don't know. Cause I love it too.
Right. That's an interesting thing that you mentioned. I didn't connect that with the people that go to their jobs, and it's not like a candid form of communication. Because in my old job, a lot of our clients were big corporations. So I would go into these big companies and talk to people and sort of observe the dynamics in a big corporation. And sometimes it's not the most candid or definitely a different dynamic than maybe your friends or something. So if a large majority of your time is spent in that sort of environment and then the rest of it is online. And I noticed even like when people are taking public commute or something, it's always on their phone. So there's almost zero time where we didn't have any of those distractions or any of those. It's almost like there's 0% of our time that's spent in the old way of doing things.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we're losing that. That's going to go away. And so I could see maybe there is some usefulness in just a signal jamming the whole fucking thing by creating like irreversible AI clone swarms of yourself flying around. So it just is like, fuck it, we can't use the technology anymore. It's imitated us into oblivion, so to speak. And then we get to be with people again, I guess. There's something nice about that. But I mean, what do you think happiness is? How do you define happiness?
Oh, man. I don't think I'm qualified to even try to answer that question. But I do listen to a lot of people that talk about it online.
Yeah.
I'm noticing, at least for me, there are certain people that I think are good models. For example, it's funny because listening to the Joe Rogan podcast so much, it feels like a lot of the guests there are my friends because I've listened to them in conversation. It's almost like I'm there. And certain people, I think they have a good idea of having this sort of being a person where they build a community around them and they're giving to that community. So I think a really good example is Kevin Hart. He was describing about how he gives back in all the ways he does and how he's accumulated so much that it's more than he could ever consume for himself. And because of that, there's an overflow of positivity that is just everybody around him receives that as well. And I think that gives you exponentially more happiness than anything else I can imagine.
You mean generosity, becoming generous?
Yeah, but not everybody could be a Kevin Hart because it's like he did something so right in a way that he was able to get that position.
Well, I mean, I think be suspicious of anyone who says they have an answer to how to be happy. Right. You know, the definition is who the fuck even knows what it means? There could be a million definitions for happiness altogether. You know, I have fallen in step with like a teacher called Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche, and I'm really into sort of his concept of truth. You know, like happiness comes, happiness goes, sorrow comes, sorrow goes. These are changing. These change throughout the day. You might be happy now. You're not going to be happy in a few hours. You're going to be happy again. But the places in between happiness, those are very interesting because I think if you could find a way to just accept that those are happening too, then happiness almost becomes a secondary thought. We don't need to be happy anymore because we're here with what it is as it is. Also, happiness is a fucking like, goddamn, it's like paint by numbers, right? It's like this broad, huge category that forces you to sort of, you know, turn your entire human experience into one button, you know, like right. Nice smiley face button where it's like so many moments throughout the day. There's some happiness. There's some misery. There's some anxiety. There's some boredom. There's some confusion. There's some like weird shit. You don't even know what you would call it. You know what I mean? Some like fugue state, some deja vu, who knows? And then you come up to someone, you're like, are you having a good time? And all they can do is like, yeah, I'm happy. It's cool. But it's like, you know, it's like a really, you know, something's fucked up when emoticons become more expressive than just general human communication. You know, like there's emoticons that show simultaneously feeling shy and happy, or, you know, at least they combine various things, whereas direct human communication has limited us to a pretty brutal binary, happy, sad. You know what I mean? I love not being hung up on whether I'm happy or not anymore. You know what I mean? That's a fun thing. The next time you find yourself in a real shit mood, instead of thinking to yourself, boy, I should change this. See what happens if you're just like, oh, okay, I'm in a shit mood. You know what I mean? Like where it's like, I'm not going to try to get better. I'm not going to try to do breath work. I'm not going to try to like do anything. I'm just in a shit mood right now. And then for me, that's really been a pretty liberating experience. And paradoxically, I think makes me way more happy. Anyway, this conversation with you has been fucking mind-blowing, man. I'm so excited to imagine that people who have your brain are being inspired by Terrence McKenna. Do you find out there in your world, in your career path, and the industry that you're in, that psychonauts abound, that that forward-thinking, philosophically minded, artistic people are everywhere out there?
Yeah, there's definitely some of them. I mean, there's stereotypes, but there's definitely other people. I think you could find these groups of people definitely in tech and in software and AI.
Is there a general sense that you get out there of a kind of like ambition, an unspoken desire to not just produce these technologies for financial gain, but to like guide humanity or to sort of create changes, intentional changes in the way we go about our day-to-day lives?
I think that's definitely one of the more rare motivations. The motivation I've come across a lot is wanting to solve specific problems just because it's challenging. So it's like this sort of game that we fall into where we just stumble across this sort of technology and we get deeper and deeper into it. And we're thinking, hey, can I push the limits this way? And then there's all these challenges that come with it. And we're thinking on the level of how do I solve these specific challenges to make this algorithm do this specific thing? And I've come across that's the most common thing I've come across, where people just love the challenge of solving these specific problems and they want to be very good at it. I haven't come across that big motivation thing where they want to change the world with AI. Typically when I see those people, they're usually not the people that are making the algorithms.
Here's my last question for you. When I was reading Nick Bostrom's book, Superintelligence, have you read that book?
I haven't. No.
It's great. You would love it. It's it's dense. It was too dense for me. You will be able to cut through it like that. For me, it was like it's very technological at places, but basically he's mapping out if there's going to be a superintelligence, here's the pathways to that superintelligence. And one of the points he makes, which is a really good point, is that when the superintelligence emerges, whatever corporation has, however you want to put it, summon the superintelligence or, you know, I don't know, generated it or whatever it is, it is going to have an exponential head start. No one will be able to catch up with, because the superintelligence right. will start improving upon itself. And also there's no reason that any corporation who gains this type of power is going to announce that it did it. So we won't even know it's happened when it's happened. Have you contemplated this point, that potentially an AI is already kind of running the show? We just don't know it.
I didn't consider it just because I didn't think it was possible yet. And I didn't read Nick Bostrom's book, but I did read Life 3.0 by Tegmark. And he covers a lot of the similar topics. And I found it interesting when you were talking about creating a better version of people. When you were on the JRE, you were saying a Joe Rogan that's 50 times better than Joe Rogan.
Yeah.
And that was one of the premises of the book, where the small team created a super intelligence and they're thinking, how do we take over the world now? And their idea was, let's start a media company. And with this media company, we could capture or captivate people, and it will make it like tailored to each person viewing it. And they go somewhat under the radar of controlling people's ideas, but in a subtle way, where they're just watching a movie or watching this sort of show. And so the way they would do it would be in a way where you wouldn't know it's happening. And eventually they get so powerful because of the revenue they have, and because it's a media company, they would have news outlets, and they would have so much money that they would be influencing policy and government eventually. And when they did take over the world, it's almost like it's too late when you realize it.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's really interesting. Well, do you? I'm sorry. This just made me think of something else. Do you have a few more moments?
Of course.
Okay. So this is where this conversation goes into the occult, goes into mysticism, because, you know, the Gnostic idea about, you know, about Gnosticism. I feel like you sort of, you got Joe to say some shit about how he was like a slave. You know?
Yeah.
You know about Gnosticism?
I don't, no.
Well, it's like, there's a great book by Jaron Lanier called The Dawn of the New Everything. And I don't know if he specifically mentions Gnosticism, but he mentions B.F. Skinner, and he mentions the manipulative algorithms that keep people glued to their phones. And B.F. Skinner being this behavior of, you know, B.F. Skinner? Well, for people who don't know, B.F. Skinner is, he was a behavioral psychologist who was the guy who like programmed pigeons using these things called Skinner boxes. And he, I believe, was the one who came up with the term operant conditioning, methods that you can use to make something that's alive and has like food motivation do what you want using food. And so he got really good at controlling pigeons, man. He got really good at controlling creatures. And his idea was, if I have control of every variable in a thing's environment, I can just about make it do anything I want, you know? And so this is like the, where you jump into more universal questions. The first thing, it's like, okay, we know this planet has life on it. So this planet has life on it. It implies probably there's life somewhere in other planets. If we find another place that for sure wasn't like, you know, somehow, that it wasn't Earth-based life that made it to Mars and some solar explosion or whatever. If we find true alien life somewhere else, then you could say with 100% certainty, your certainty of life on other planets goes up way more in that case, right? And so now we've got life on a planet that's barely been around based on geological time. It's already hit the point technologically where it's replicating itself. It's already hitting the point technologically where it's like, creating versions of itself, and also hitting the point technologically where it's manipulating its own species, hacking their brains, so to speak, using algorithms that grab their attention. And now it's using AI to do that very same thing. So anyway, this is where you run into the whole simulation theory idea, which is like, you think this is the first time it's happened? You think this is the first time in all of time space that a civilization did this shit? And then if it can be done, who's to say it isn't already being done on us right now? That the thing we call planet Earth, the thing we call nature, the thing we call experience or sentience is just what it is to be glued to an environment produced by an advanced technology that has caught our attention and keeps us completely locked down like a cat chasing a laser pointer. You know what I mean? So have you ever thought about that? That in fact, you're just what y'all are doing, what you did with Rogan, is just a kind of echo of a thing that keeps getting done over and over and over again whenever there's a specific type of civilization that forms. You're just echoing a cosmic predicament.
Right. So one requirement to create a simulation would be to be able to program something as complex as a human. So that's definitely one of the steps forward. I mean, if you could program a human or something as complex as we know, then we know we're one step closer to being able to create a simulation.
Yeah.
In that sense, I think we're closer to that. And one quick thing that was sort of funny, which on that clip, I did reference this sort of simulation. That was actually a true story. So I was actually at the Comedy Store on Thanksgiving weekend, and some guy came up to Joe Rogan saying it was a simulation. So it's sort of a... Yeah, it was a little Easter egg for people that were there.
Wow, holy fucking shit. Y'all are the best. I hope everybody out there in your field, they're as cool as you are, man, because that means we have some good stuff in store for us and not just the creepy, demonic, medical marijuana edible universe that my mind keeps prognosticating when I think about the implications of this technology. I've really enjoyed talking with you, man. I hope you'll let me use this for the podcast. I know we started off saying it was just going to be a Skype call.
Well, it's been amazing talking to you as well.
It's not me. It's not me. Listen, I haven't existed for a long time. You're talking to just an AI and DARPA. We're actually having, this is one of our recruitment sessions. This is the way we recruit people. We first imitate people that they're vaguely. No, yes. Thank you so much, Hashim, for being on the DTFH. Where can people find you?
Nowhere. I mean, LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn.
You're the coolest guest yet. Thank you so much. Hare Krishna. A tremendous thanks to Hash for being a guest on the DTFH. If you want to reach out to him, I'll have all the links you need at DuncanTrussell.com. Thank you, Blue Chew, for sponsoring this episode of the DTFH. Don't forget, use offer code Duncan. Give them a try. They will send you free boner pills. And thank you for listening to the DTFH. Please subscribe to us on Patreon. Subscribe to us on iTunes and subscribe to the idea that you are an unlimited super potential manifesting as your current incarnation in this dimension. I'll see you next time. Hare Krishna.